Week 3's lecture is about wonder and delight. It features poems by Mary Oliver, Dorothea Tanning, Lucille Clifton, Maggie Smith, Robert Frost, and one poem and three delight essays by Ross Gay. Invitation by Mary Oliver. Oh, do you have time to linger for just a while out of your busy and important day for the goldfinches that have gathered in a field of thistles for a musical battle to see who can sing the highest note or the lowest or the most expressive of mirth or the most tender? Their strong, blunt beaks drink the air as they strive melodiously, not for your sake and not for mine and not for the sake of winning, but for sheer delight and gratitude. Believe us, they say, it is a serious thing just to be alive on this fresh morning in this broken world. I beg of you, do not walk by without pausing to attend to this rather ridiculous performance. It could mean something. It could mean everything. It could be what Rilke meant when he wrote, "You must change your life." When I first read this poem, sometime in 2017, it made me say, yes, then huh? Then how? I was trying to figure out what the "it" in the last few lines refers to. It could mean something. It could mean everything. It could be what Rilke meant when he wrote, "You must change your life." I was skeptical of the idea that pausing to look at some group of birds would change my life. Back then, I wasn't really into birds, and I was wary of big epiphanies, that one moment that would change everything. But now, 5 years later, I've come to realize that the "it" is not one thing, not one moment. It is the act of noticing one thing, then noticing another, and another, and another. Pausing to attend, letting the world in, witnessing it, being open to it, becoming dazzled by it, getting in the habit of becoming in wonder of it. Wonder can mean a lot of things: awe, astonishment, surprise, devotion, uncertainty, to be in a state of not knowing or not yet knowing, mystery. All of these involve a willingness to be open to something beyond yourself and your perspective, to be moved, startled, surprised, bewildered, enchanted by something you're noticing, and then allowing that something to change you. Next week, we'll talk about that transformation in terms of curiosity and a desire to learn and connect. This week, we'll talk about it in terms of delight, to find and be transformed by those moments, experiences, encounters that please you and bring you joy, and that, if you let them, might make you want to use more exclamation points and call out, "Oh," in gratitude and delight, that might inspire you to declare, but maybe just in your head, your love for a bird or a bee or a place, and that might lead you to point exuberantly towards the woods, at that bird right there, or to stop and lean your head way back to take in the very top of a massive cottonwood tree. When I started to notice the trees near the gorge, the ones that welcome me, or that stretch above, their gnarled limbs sprawling across the sky, or the ones that lean in and whisper to each other, I began searching for poems, hoping to find some guidance in my own efforts to notice and describe these trees as I ran by. This is one of the first poems I found. "Woman Waving to Trees," Dorothea Tanning. Not that anyone would notice it at first. I have taken to marveling at the trees in our park. One thing I can tell you, they are beautiful, and they know it. They are also tired, hundreds of years stuck in one spot, beautiful paralytics. When I am under them, they feel my gaze, watching me wave my foolish hand, and envy the joy of being a moving target. Loungers on the benches begin to notice, one to another. Well, you see all kinds. Most of them sit looking down at nothing, as if there was truly nothing else to look at, until there's a woman waving up to the branching boughs of these old trees. "Raise your heads, pals, look high. You may see more than you ever thought possible, up where something might be waving back to tell her she has seen the marvelous." Raise your heads, pals, look high. I love this line. It reminds me of another poem I recently read about walking in poetry. Quote, poets and walkers look up more often than other people. Question, how often do you look up? What do you notice? Some delightful things I've noticed when looking up and written about in my running log. 1. Streaks of clouds, a blanket of thin, shredded fluff, a tattered veil. 2. A plane flying through the sky, circling like a shark. 3. 3 massive cottonwood trees in my neighborhood. 4. Squirrels' nests. 5. A turkey vulture, its wings stretched wide, gracefully riding a thermal. 6. The sun illuminating the tops of trees. 7. Down in the gorge, people on the path high above, looking small and far away. Raise your heads, pals, also makes me think of this week's reading from Ross Gay. I imagine it as a gesture similar to pointing out a delight to others or saying, look. In Delight number 65, Found Things, Gay wonders about the connection between experiencing delight and sharing it with others. He tentatively concludes, quote, our delight grows as we share it. In an interview about the book, he says even more about this connection. One of the things that I've learned is that sharing for me, sharing, noticing what delights me, and then naming it, recognizing it, and then sharing it, is a kind of profound way of connecting. To be like, I love, look at this, what I love. Maybe it's beckoning, even. It's definitely a reaching, and it's a way of probably being like, do you love this too? We might love this thing together. Delight number 65, Found Things, is part of Ross Gay's The Book of Delights. In his preface, he writes, one day last July, feeling delighted and compelled to both wonder about and share that delight, I decided that it might feel nice, even useful, to write a daily essay about something delightful. So he decided for a year, from one birthday to the next, to find a delight each day and write about it. He ended up writing 102 delights, including Delight number 65, Found Things, Delight number 19, The Irrepressible, The Gratitude, and Delight number 84, Fireflies. Gay's description in Delight number 19 of his know-it-all dad smiling as he declares the impossibility of bumblebees being able to fly, even as one flies past him, makes me think of a few lines from Lucille Clifton's poem, All Praises. Praise impossible things. Praise the presence among us of the unfenced is. The delight of impossible things, things that we don't yet or might never understand fully, that don't make sense, those wonderful, strange, magical, unruly things that are always more than our language can contain, that can leave us speechless, confused, amazed, delighted. I'm not sure this counts as an impossible thing, but one of the delightful, improbable things I've encountered while out by the gorge was a big wild turkey running very fast and a smaller one trying to keep up. My description comes from a log entry dated October 21st, 2019. I could write about the many leaves that had fallen in the wind and rain and were littering the path, or how it felt like it was still raining with all the water dropping from the trees, or the strange quality of the light, dark at first, then a slow spread, then sunshine, or seeing the forest floor a few times, or turning around at the trestle and racing the cars crawling their way through the four-way stop, or actually enjoying running into the stiff wind, a big grin on my face, or stopping at the end to study the ravine and being able to clearly see the wrought iron fence. I could, but all I really want to mention are the two turkeys I saw crossing Edmond Boulevard as I walked home through my neighborhood. The one in front was running fast, bobbing its head, while the second, smaller one tried to keep up. Did you know that turkeys could run fast? I didn't. As I watched them run away, I thought that seeing them run so quickly with their graceful legs and awkward heads was all I needed today. In addition to the impossible, I find much delight in looking out for the ridiculous and making note of it in my running log, like the group of 20 bikers on the trail all dressed up like Santa, the couple who jump rope up the steep hill by the locks and dam number one, the squirrel who was so surprised to see me on the trail that it does a backflip in its haste to get away, the older biker wearing the brim of a straw hat around her bike helmet, and perhaps one of my favorite ridiculous performers, the singing, no-hands-on-the-handlebars biker. I wrote this in a log entry on June 23, 2020. About halfway through our walk, we saw a man biking near the top of a hill just past the welcoming oaks. He was singing loudly. What was he singing? A show tune or a love song or something like that? And he had his hands resting on his knees while he was biking. He looked calm and chill and unworried about the fact that he was about to bike down a hill without having his hands on the handlebars. He looked rather ridiculous, but his embracing of this ridiculousness was wonderful and delightful and brought me some joy. Usually I would judge this behavior as reckless, but he was so relaxed and ridiculous that all I could do was marvel at it. I wasn't the only one. About a minute later, I heard some other people talking excitedly about him too. Question: what ridiculous performances have you experienced while moving outside? It's important to note that my noticing of this biker was only a few months into the pandemic and less than a month after George Floyd was murdered. A scary, uncertain, terribly difficult time around the country and here in Minneapolis. Indeed, moments of delight or ridiculousness or joy take place in the midst of suffering and struggle in a broken world, as Mary Oliver describes in the poem with which I open this lecture. Believe us, they say, it is a serious thing just to be alive on this fresh morning in this broken world. The finding and sharing of delight is not an escape from the breaking and broken world, although it might be a pause, a moment to float just above. But it's a form of resistance, the start of transformation, a shift in orientation from despair and hopelessness to possibility and wonder. In a poem written before the Book of Delights, Gay describes this resistance. "Sorrow Is Not My Name" by Ross Gay, after Gwendolyn Brooks. No matter the pole toward brink, no matter the florid, deep sleep awaits. There is a time for everything. Look. Just this morning, a vulture nodded his red, grizzled head at me, and I looked at him, admiring the sickle of his beak. Then the wind kicked up, and after arranging that good suit of feathers, he up and took off. Just like that. And to boot, there are, on this planet alone, something like 2 million naturally occurring sweet things, some with names so generous as to kick the steel from my knees. Agave, persimmon, stickball, the purple okra I bought for $2 at the market. Think of that. The long night, the skeleton in the mirror, the man behind me on the bus taking notes, yeah. But look, my niece is running through a field calling my name. My neighbor sings like an angel, and at the end of my block is a basketball court. I remember. My color's green. I'm spring." This last line about green and spring is a reference to Gwendolyn Brooks's powerful poem, To the Young Who Want to Die, and her ending lines, "You need not die today. Stay here. Through pout or pain or peskiness, stay here. See what the news is going to be tomorrow. Graves grow no green that you can use. Remember, green's your color. You are spring." This is what Aimee Nezhika Mtatil means when she says that she always lets the wonder win. It's there. A grief is there. Sadness and rage is always there. And then the wonder wins. I make sure the wonder wins. And definitely there are harder days than others, but that's where the practice is. I try with all my might to make the wonder win by the end of the day. Letting the wonder win, noticing the delight in the midst of a broken, breaking world, can be difficult, but it can get easier as we practice it. In the preface to the Book of Delights, Gay suggests that his almost daily practice of noticing and then writing about a delight enabled him to develop a delight muscle. I love this idea of creating a practice to build up our delight muscle so that we can find and experience more delight. With that in mind, I'll end this lecture with two exercises I've experimented with while moving by the gorge to help build up my delight muscle. 1. Let's begin with bees. One day, you encounter a tiny gnome village set up on the boulevard in front of a neighbor's house. You are delighted. Now you always look for gnomes and find them everywhere, in the stumps of dead trees, below bushes, hidden in hostas. You want to make more room for these types of delight. You are at the lake and overhear a kid call out jubilantly, "I just saw a fish, a northern pike, right there, right there." Such wonderful enthusiasm. You are tired of cynicism and swallowing your joy. You want to be more like this boy. From Maggie Smith's Let's Not Begin. If I list everything I love about the world, and if that list is long and heavy enough, I can lift it over and over. Repetitions, they're called, reps. To keep my heart on, to keep the dirt off. Let's begin with bees and the hum and the honey singing on my tongue and the child sleeping at last. And. Step 1, make a list. Make a list of what you love. This list can be general, including everything you love in the world, or specific, focused on what you love about a particular place, like the Mississippi River Gorge. This list can include big things, a city, a poet, a philosophy, or little things, the curve of a retaining wall, the shade of blue of the water. Compose this list while moving outside. Step 2. Keep adding to the list. You can add to one big list, watching it grow taller every day, or create a series of lists that, when combined, stretch wider and wider. Add new items as you experience joy in your encounters with the things you love. Do not worry that your list will become too long or unruly. As the list expands, so does your capacity to love and experience joy. Step 3. Be excessively enthusiastic with the list. In your list, and in any recitations of your list, use lots of exclamation points and ohs, or even ahs. Do this without shame or irony. Bonus, make joy for others. Hang some wind chimes that sing a whole tone scale. Hide some gnomes in your front yard. Make the joy you found available to others. Exercise 2, a dust of snow. Your back hurts. It's been hurting off and on all winter. You are worried, wondering what might be wrong. Then you remember the wedge of geese flying overhead on your walk earlier today, and you forget about your back. You want to find more ways to forget. You are walking on the boulevard across from the gorge, and you notice the wild turkeys in a neighbor's yard. You watch them for a minute, standing there, unbothered by your presence, and think, "This is it. This is the thing I want to remember about today, these three wild turkeys hanging out in someone's yard." You want to find more things like these turkeys to notice and remember. Dust of Snow by Robert Frost. The way a crow shook down on me the dust of snow from a hemlock tree has given my heart a change of mood and saved some part of a day I had rued. Step 1, go outside. Walk around the neighborhood or head to the gorge. Step 2, pay attention. Do not listen to your headphones. Step 3, encounter something that delights you. Do not search for this delight. Let it find you. It might take some practice, being outside regularly and paying attention to the world, but it will find you. Step 5, delight in it for a while. Stand still, stare hard, listen up, breathe. Absorb the details of the delight. Step 6. Remember the delight. Write a description of the delight in your notebook or on your log so that you can remember it and rely on it later. Step 7. Repeat steps 1 through 6 regularly. Practice being found by delight and remembering it. It might take weeks or months or years, but it will get easier to remember joy and forget worry. Question. How will you let the wonder win today? What delights will find you?